Chapter 24. The Potty Room. A person can learn a few things from an old dog. Jenny and I were not quite middle-aged. Our children were young, our health good, and our retirement years still an unfathomable distance off on the horizon. It would have been easy to deny the inevitable creep of age, to pretend it might somehow pass us by. Marley would not afford us the luxury of such denial. As we watched him grow gray and deaf and creaky, there was no ignoring his mortality, or ours. In the brief span of 12 years, Marley had gone from bubbly puppy, to awkward adolescent, to muscular adult, to doddering senior citizen. He aged roughly 7 years for every one of ours, putting him, in human years, on the downward slope to 90. His once sparkling white teeth had gradually worn down to brown nubs. His breath, always a bit on the fishy side, had taken on the bouquet of a sun-baked dumpster. His digestion was not what it once had been, and he became as gassy as a methane plant. There were days I swore that if I lit a match, the whole house would go up. Marley was able to clear an entire room with his silent, deadly flatulence, which seemed to increase in direct correlation to the number of dinner guests we had in our home. "Marley, not again!" the children would scream in unison and lead the retreat. Sometimes he drove even himself away. He would be sleeping peacefully when the smell would reach his nostrils. His eyes would pop open and he'd furl his brow as if asking, "Good God, who dealt it?" And he would stand up and nonchalantly move into the next room. When he wasn't farting, he was outside pooping, or at least thinking about it. His choosiness about where he squatted to defecate had grown to the point of compulsive obsession. Each time I let him out, he took longer and longer to decide on the perfect spot. Back and forth he would promenade, sniffing, pausing, scratching, circling, moving on, the whole while sporting a ridiculous grin on his face. I stood outside, sometimes in the rain, sometimes in the snow, sometimes in the dark of night, often barefoot, occasionally just in my boxer shorts, knowing from experience that I didn't dare leave him unsupervised, lest he decide to meander up the hill to visit the dogs on the next street. Sneaking away became a sport for him. If the opportunity presented itself and he thought he could get away with it, he would sniff and shuffle his way from one bush to the next until he was out of sight. Late one night, I let him out the front door for his final walk before bed. Freezing rain was forming an icy slush on the ground, and I turned around to grab a slicker out of the front closet. When I walked out onto the sidewalk less than a minute later, he was nowhere to be found. I walked out into the yard whistling and clapping, knowing he couldn't hear me. For 20 minutes I prowled through our neighbor's yards in the rain, making quite the fashion statement, dressed in boots, raincoat, and boxer shorts. As the minutes passed, my anger turned to worry. I thought of those old men you read about in the newspaper who wander away from nursing homes and are found frozen in the snow 3 days later. I returned home, walked upstairs, and woke up Jenny. "Marley's disappeared. I can't find him anywhere. He's out there in the freezing rain." She was on her feet instantly, pulling on jeans, slipping into a sweater and boots. Together, we broadened the search. I could hear her way up the side of the hill, whistling and clucking for him, as I crashed through the woods in the dark, half expecting to find him lying unconscious in a creek bed. Eventually, our paths met up. Anything? Nothing. We were soaked from the rain, and my bare legs were stinging from the cold. "Let's go home and get warm, and I'll come back out with the car." We walked down the hill and up the driveway. That's when we saw him, standing beneath the overhang out of the rain and overjoyed to have us back. I could have killed him. Instead, I brought him inside and toweled him off, the unmistakable smell of wet dog filling the kitchen. Exhausted from his late-night jaunt, Marley conked out and did not budge till nearly noon the next day. Marley's eyesight had grown fuzzy, and bunnies could now scamper past a dozen feet in front of him without him noticing. He was shedding his fur in vast quantities, forcing Jenny to vacuum every day, and still she couldn't keep up with it. One night as I watched television, I dangled my leg off the couch and absently stroked his hip with my bare foot. At the commercial break, I looked down to see a sphere of fur the size of a grapefruit near where I had been rubbing. His hairballs rolled across the wood floors like tumbleweeds on a wind-blown plain. Most worrisome of all were his hips, which had mostly forsaken him. Arthritis had snuck into his joints, weakening them and making them ache. The same dog that once could ride me bronco style on his back could now barely pull himself up. He groaned in pain when he lay down, and groaned again when he struggled to his feet. I did not realize just how weak his hips had become until one day when I gave his rump a light pat and his hindquarters collapsed beneath him. Down he went. It was painful to watch. Climbing the stairs to the second floor was becoming increasingly difficult for him, but he wouldn't think of sleeping alone on the main floor. Marley loved people, loved resting his chin on the mattress and panning in our faces as we slept, loved jamming his head through the shower curtain for a drink as we bathed, and he wasn't about to stop now. Each night when Jenny and I retired to our bedroom, he would fret at the foot of the stairs, whining, yipping, pacing, tentatively testing the first step with his front paw as he mustered his courage for the ascent that not long before had been effortless. From the top of the stairs I would beckon, "Come on, boy, you can do it!" After several minutes of this, he would disappear around the corner in order to get a running start, and then come charging up, his front shoulders bearing most of his weight. Sometimes he made it. Sometimes he stalled mid-flight and had to return to the bottom and try again. On his most pitiful attempts, he would lose his footing entirely and slide ingloriously backward down the steps on his belly. He was too big for me to carry, but increasingly I found myself following him up the stairs, lifting his rear end up each step as he hopped forward on his front paws. Because of the difficulty stairs now posed for him, I assumed Marley would try to limit the number of trips he made up and down. That would be giving him far too much credit for common sense. No matter how much trouble he had getting up the stairs, if I returned downstairs, say, to grab a book or turn off the lights, he would be right on my heels, clomping heavily down behind me. Then seconds later, he would have to repeat the torturous climb. This went on not only at night, but all day long, too. I would be reading the newspaper at the kitchen table with Marley curled up at my feet when I would get up for a refill from the coffee pot across the room. Even though I was within sight and would be coming right back, he would lumber with difficulty to his feet and trudge over to be with me. No sooner had he gotten comfortable at my feet by the coffee pot than I would return to the table, where he would again drag himself and settle in. A few minutes later, I would walk into the family room to turn on the stereo, and up again he would struggle, following me in, circling around, and collapsing with a moan beside me, just as I was ready to walk away. So it would go, not only with me, but with Jenny and the kids, too.